Media Supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Pat Matheny. You're listening to Radio KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. Mm-hmm. I am Q Ward.
Indeed.
When we form Voltron, when we come together, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
At 12:15, I don't even know what time it is.
Break it down.
Break it down. As Civic Cypher.
That is the truth. Got a great show in store for you. Be sure to stick around. We are going to be talking about police reform. We talk about that quite a bit. We're going to be asking the question today, however, how do you reform this? I've been paying attention to some stuff on social media, a lot of things. Been taking place, a lot of things that we haven't even been able to touch.
I can't wait to delve into this topic.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's some people on each side of it that think there's nothing wrong with it, and others that think it can't be reformed.
And I can't wait to let you loose on that, because that's exactly why we need to talk about it. But yeah, stick around. Some of the stories I have been able to cover on the Black Information Network daily podcast.
One time. For the Black Information Network,
yes, sir.
Daily podcast.
Yes, sir.
I'm a subscriber, by the way.
I appreciate that.
On all podcast platforms, that means multiple, and YouTube.
Okay,
cool. Whenever you see that like count go up, know your brother is on there.
I love that.
Clicking the thumbs up.
But some of these stories we cannot cover. However, we are going to cover two today. We just can't cover every single story. But the two that we've chosen to cover today that help us question what police reform could look like, should look like, we think you'll be interested in. A little later in the show, we're going to be talking about the Florida Department of Education's decision to decline including AP African American Studies and their reasoning and how utterly insulting that is. But first and foremost, like we always do at this time, let's talk about something happy, something that makes us smile. We like to call it Ebony Excellence. Q,
shall we?
Shall. So today's Ebony Excellence is brought to you by Hip Hop Weekly Media. And we are going to shout out the one and only Anthony T. Browder. Now, I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with him on... Good.
I was going to ask you, where did you have that conversation? But never mind.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell the people.
Yeah, of course. It was on the Black Information Network daily podcast. Again, a long conversation, a four-part interview with this man. But he is a man with a life well-lived, a man who's definitely inspired me. The conversation goes, he's an Egyptologist, for those that don't know. In fact, I'll read a bit about him. He's an author, publisher, cultural historian, artist, and educational consultant. Graduate of Howard University's College of Fine Arts, and has lectured extensively around the world. He is the founder and director of IKG Cultural Resources and has devoted 30 years to researching ancient Egyptian history, science, philosophy, and culture. And he's been to Egypt 54 times. I think it's higher than that since 1980. And he is the first African-American to fund and coordinate an archaeological dig in Egypt. And he just has tons of insight into the roots of civilization advanced civilization, and of course, those roots being African roots, things that we would not otherwise know about. You think of the Greeks, you think of the Romans, but no, the civilizations that predated those by thousands of years were in Africa. Our conversation, we talk about the roots of all the Abrahamic religions and how those come from Africa. And I am a person who grew up in a Christian household, as is Q, so not trying to change anybody's belief system, but the facts are the facts. And just a wonderful conversation. I implore you to check it out once again on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And again, Ebony Excellence, Anthony T. Browder, you are him. And we just appreciate you giving back to us so that we can do our job.
Yes, indeed.
Moving on. All right. How do you reform this? This is a question that was posed by Kasim Rashid. He is a person on Instagram who is a potent speaker and a very informed individual. I believe he might be of Middle Eastern descent, something like that. And he is a person who's very passionate about the way people are treated. I wouldn't profess to know his religious background, but he is a brother to my people insofar as I can tell, and a brother to all people. And so I need you to understand that when he poses this question, it really caused me to think, how do you reform this? And so his standard practice, is his modus operandi, is to tell a story. Yeah. On Instagram, he's got the video and everything like that. So he's filming himself and he's, you know, recalling a story that has taken place in the media. An individual was going about their business. They had an interaction with the police. They ended up dead or beat up or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he exposes the many ways that police abuse their power. He exposes the many ways that human beings suffer at the hands of police, and often enough explains why it's unnecessary for there to be human citizen suffering. You know, the people that are supposed to protect and serve are often hurting the citizens. And he points out things that are certainly necessary, and then asks the question, how do you reform this? And I think a lot of times his point is, or rather what he's trying to suggest is that we need to really rethink it, not continue to revise it. We can't train these things away. This isn't, you know, this isn't an isolated incident or a few bad apples. There's so many bad apples. Granted, there's so many more police officers that I'm sure do, you know, fine work, but there is a system that disproportionately affects certain groups in this country, and a system overall that is broken. And it's really, if we're being honest, elites, wealthier white people in this country who are able to live comfortably under the current system because it almost never affects them in a negative way. And so reform, in his opinion, based on, you know, the videos that he makes, is something that is not necessarily the best way to go about dealing with this. Hence the question, how do you reform this? Mm-hmm. Right. So we're adopting that, and we are opening the floor to discussion. We would love for people to come to the table, to this round glass table that we have in the studio here for Civic Cypher, and share with us ideas on how we reform this, ideas that have not been implemented, ideas that have not had their time, their day in the sun, to be thoroughly tested and fleshed out. How is it that in 2023, in late January 2023, the things that we were pushing back against in the 60s with the civil rights movement, and in the 70s with the Panthers, and in the 80s when we were, you know, getting behind Jesse Jackson who was run for president, and we were trying to push back, you know, as a community against the scourge of crack, and, you know, these myths and these these lies and rumors about how we treated our families, and that we abandoned our families as Black men, or that we were all gangbangers and all this sort of stuff. And then on and on until now, you know, with the Trayvon Martins birthing the Black Lives Matter movement, all the way up to 2020 with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, all the way up to now, these things are still happening. And every single step of the way, there's always been reform. There's always been oversight. There's always all these things. We've already had these conversations. We've already tried these things, and they've been, again, they've had their time in the sun for years. So now when we tell these stories, our question is, how do we reform this? And I think that the idea here is not to like radicalize anyone or anything like that. You know, of course we have our own beliefs. We do our best not to try to impose them, but to just highlight them, mm-hmm. you know, shed light on our beliefs. We do believe the system is broken. We do believe that police reform is kind of a tall order. It doesn't work. And that we need to rethink what it means to be safe in a community, what that means, and how that looks. And does that mean that the police departments need tanks? Or does that mean that we need to invest that tank money into programs that, again, prevent the necessity of crime in the first place? If people have enough money, then they're not stealing. If people if children have after school programs, or, you know, programs to keep them engaged and, you know, to help them excel in school, aren't they less likely to be caught up in juvenile delinquency and so forth? These things that make sense, but they never make it past these talking points where folks who do choose to humor us by engaging in this conversation say the same thing. We need police reform. Now, let's get to the first story. Sorry, thank you for letting me paint that picture. But yeah, first things first. This comes from our very own BINnews.com. An Ohio police sergeant has been placed on administrative leave after he was caught on video punching a Black woman following a dispute over cheese at a local McDonald's. The incident unfolded on Monday, which would have been January 16th at the time, when Butler Township, Ohio police officers responded to a report of a woman yelling at employees over an order mistake at the fast food chain. She's mad over a 30-cent piece of cheese, a McDonald's employee who called 911 dispatchers, per records obtained by KIRO 7 News, which is also the source of this content here. Body camera footage shows the woman, identified as Latinka Hancock, waiting in her car when Sergeant Todd Stanley and Officer Tim Zellers arrived at the scene. When Stanley directed her to fill out a notice for trespassing, she refused. In the footage, Hancock can be seen speaking with police before the encounter became physical, as officers said she resisted arrest. Zellers was caught on body camera footage pointing his taser at Hancock, and Stanley punched the woman in the face 3 times before pressing her against a police cruiser and putting her handcuffs on. Bystander video also captured the violent arrest, sparking outrage among the community. Okay, so this is what is in the news. This is what was written down. Now, we've seen the video,
unfortunately.
And for those of you who have not seen the video, it is a woman talking to police, saying her piece. And she obviously felt like she was right. And when the officer presented the, you know, the paperwork, notice how it says a confrontation, or what is it? The encounter became physical, as officers said she resisted arrest. Again, that comes from KIRO 7 News, and then was reported by BIN News. But this is the way police often describe incidents, and then they release the report to news stations like KIRO 7 News, and then they just copy paste. So the encounter became physical implies that both parties were at fault. But I'm here to tell you that there was only one individual that made the encounter physical. Granted, she didn't want to sign the paperwork. That's fine. There are many people, often white, they get pulled over and they say, hey, buddy, I'm not going to sign that ticket. I did nothing wrong. You're going to take that ticket and shut whatever, you know, you get it, right? I'm not picking on anybody. These are things that I've seen in my own life. I'm sure that you understand this, right? This woman is no different. She feels like, obviously, it's not about 30 cents. It's about the principal. You know, maybe she feels like she paid and she was not.
I mean, even if it was about 30 cents.
That's her money.
If the thing that I bought costs 30 cents, I'm going to need that.
You're right. Exactly. But, you know, the officer became very upset with this woman and punched her in the face 3 times. The woman did not punch him. None of these things happened. And then because of the bystander video, the officer can't say some of the other things that they often do say, which
some,
is
some of the things they probably did say in their report.
Oh, yeah, perhaps. Yeah. But, you know, I remember the it wasn't Philando Castile. It was the death right before his, where there was an I forget his name. This wasn't in New York. I want to say it was somewhere south of New York. But there was a gentleman, black gentleman, who was at a gas station. And I think he might have been. I couldn't tell you. You know, these stories are quite commonplace.
Sadly.
I think he was handcuffed on the ground. And the officers were like punching and kicking him when he was handcuffed. And because of the angle of the video, the officers came out with a story saying, oh, well, the guy's hands behind his back as he was handcuffed, the guy grabbed my genitalia. And then that gave me license to like beat him up, right? Which, of course, if you watch the video, you don't believe that's true. But because that's out of view, you kind of have to take the officer's word for it because this guy's dead, right? So in this instance, because there's a bystander video, it's not just their body cam video, you can see that this woman, again, Latinka Hancock, did nothing to provoke anything physical. It was just the officer who probably was...
Well, there was her not doing what he said when he said it because he said it.
Thank you, Q.
Right? Like, how dare you?
Yeah. He's God, right?
Yeah, it's typically a problem. You're not doing what I said to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. As we've seen.
I thought that was compelling justification.
Mm. So, yeah. And, you know, people often say things like, well, you know, he's on administrative leave paid, I'm sure, you know, and he'll get transferred or whatever because of whatever. But I would like to posit that perhaps he harbors anti-black sentiments. And my basis for that is, I think that you'll agree that it would be hard to imagine that same officer punching. Here she goes. You ready, Q? I'm going to say it. A 26-year-old,
yeah,
blonde-haired white woman.
None of that part matters.
Sure, I know. But, you know, for our listeners where they can't really, you know, seeing this, it's so commonplace. You know, if we're going to compare apples to apples, we need to kind of change the image in our listeners' minds. So it's a slow process, and I appreciate you giving me the floor so that I can do that. But, yeah, it's hard to imagine this guy doing that to, again, the 26-year-old blonde-haired, you know, white woman, right? Punching her in the face 3 times. And if that did happen, you can imagine the outrage, right? But these things don't tend to happen, right? I'm not trying to say that the police have never abused their authority with that type of person, but it's not prevalent to the degree that this is. And so this is my basis for saying that this is perhaps anti-black sentiment. And again, because this country has given police power that is really beyond measure. Stand with the police no matter what. It's kind of hard for us to now think of reform as the way that we deal with this, right? That was an absolute outright abuse of power, right? And we've seen this before. We've seen this with the Rodney King verdict and how people react to that. We've seen what happens here. And there will no longer be that stunning silence. Not as long as they give us microphones, you know? So I asked the question, how do you reform this? Moving on. This one is one that Q sent over. And this also comes from KIRO7.com. 5 officers in Memphis were fired following an investigation into the arrest and death of a man. All right, I'm going to read this, and then I want you to take a cue. In a news release, Memphis Police Department said on Friday, following the death of Tyree Nichols and a review of their circumstances surrounding the incident, the department decided to fire five of its officers. Memphis Police Department said that it was determined that the officers had violated multiple policies that the department has, which include excessive use of force, duty to intervene, and duty to render aid. Memphis Police Department said officers were fired earlier in the day on Friday. They were identified as Tadarius Bean, Demetrius Haley, Emmett Martin III, Desmond Mills Jr., and Justin Smith. Smith and Martin were hired in March 2018. Mills was hired in March 2017. Bean and Haley were both hired in August 2020. According to the AP, all 5 officers were involved in the arrest of Nichols, 29, on January 7th. All 5 officers who were fired and Nichols were all Black. The Memphis Police Department said, according to the AP, Nichols was pulled over by officers for reckless driving, police said. According to WHBQ, officers claimed that Nichols ran, leading to multiple confrontations between the officers and Nichols. He was eventually arrested and officers showed use of force following the confrontations. Nichols reportedly complained of shortness of breath, Memphis Police Department said, according to WHBQ. Nichols was taken to the hospital where he died on January 10th. So, quote, the Memphis Police Department is committed to protecting and defending the rights of every citizen in our city. The egregious nature of this incident is not a reflection of the good work that our officers perform with integrity every day. And that quote comes from Memphis Police Department Chief Sarilyn C.J. Davis. And then a civil rights investigation has been reportedly opened by the United States Justice Department, according to the AP. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation is reportedly looking into the force that was used during the arrest. WHBQ reported that any criminal charges may or may not come as a result of the incident between the officers and Nichols, and those would be announced later on. No further information has been released. And Q, let's get your 2 cents.
May or may not. You know, our country and its institutions have done probably the most masterful job in history of convincing its subjects, its citizens, its people to fully emotionally invest in its institutions, like the military, like the police, and those institutions, like even its government, beyond reproach, beyond criticism, beyond being held to even the reasonable minimum accountability standards, right? So you and I have had conversations long before Civic Cypher existed, but just in general about the types of things that would cause people on the right or people that are racist or people who are not racist but just don't have the same everyday encounters and struggles that we have. And we used to say things like, man, if it ever came to their door, it would change their minds. But with the mass shootings like that we've witnessed, not even that's true. Mm-hmm. Even when the victims are young white children, people still won't stand up against the gun lobby. That's not even
the government.
The government.
Yeah.
So bent on maintaining things that they have been taught are righteous, that even with evidence to the contrary, they won't change their minds, right? So it's hard to think about reform, Ramses, because people often don't look to change things when they don't see anything wrong with them. And I remember, you know, back during our former president's time in office, they interviewed this woman, and it's just about the type of things that he said. And the thing that he said during his election, which there's no president, I don't think, ever in history that could have had something like that come out and then gone on to win the presidency, when he said about just grabbing women by their private parts. Mm-hmm. And they asked this lady at a rally, who was a very, very prominent supporter. She had every piece of paraphernalia that ever was ever made on. Mm-hmm. And she had her 2 young daughters with her. And she'd rather rob her daughters of their dignity and denounce her candidate and denounce her president. When asked about those things that he said and the way that he viewed women, and she then turned to her daughters and kind of suggested to them that, you know, sometimes that's okay. And I was just blown away, like the zealot like beliefs that a lot of people in this country have cannot be changed by logic or evidence or numbers or anything. So it'd be hard to get wholesale buy-in for any type of reform. Because when people said defund the police, a lot of people lost their minds.
Yeah, and that wasn't even that like, bad an idea.
Why would you say such a thing? And I think I said to you, not jokingly, that being phrased that way is all the runway they need to wriggle out of it.
Yeah.
They can take that phrase and make it sound so
much worse than it actually is.
You know what I'm saying?
So let me add this to that too. So our issue on the show oftentimes is with policing the institution, not with white police officers. And I think this story illustrates that. Again, all of these people involved were black, and black people can be white supremacists too. You know, black people own slaves. We've seen what happened with, Kanye West. You know what I'm saying? This is the thing. Black people can buy into this narrative too, and police officers certainly are no exception. So it's a system that oppresses black and brown people.
Police officers more so.
They're
indoctrinated in the system that has existed long before they did.
And now,
proper propaganda.
Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses John.
I am Hugh Ward. You guys are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Stick around. We still got a lot more show in stow for you. We're going to be talking about the Florida Department of Education.
They should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that. They, in short, don't think that the education of African American studies has any educational value. And so we're going to break that down. And we're also going to be spending some time talking about a gentleman by the name of Bo Diddley for our Way Black History Fact. For those of you who are fans of rock and roll music or blues or any of that sort of stuff, we're going to show you the black origins of certainly rock and roll. I'm sure that you can actually tell about the blues. But before we get there, let's talk about becoming a better ally, BABA. So today's BABA is sponsored by Major Threads, for the finest in quality menswear. Check out majorthreads.com. Today's BABA comes from Black Enterprise. And the headline reads, one of the nation's largest mutual fund companies, Fidelity Investments, is pledging $250 million to help as many as 50,000 Black, Latinx, and historically underserved students go to college. So the Boston-based firm is making the commitment via a fresh social impact initiative, initiative known as Invest in My Education. The effort over the next 5 years will include providing students with scholarships and mentorships. It will focus on boosting college graduation rates, helping students finish school with no debt, and providing assistance in obtaining well-paying jobs after college. The support is truly needed. Fidelity disclosed that just 21% of Black students who start college graduate within 4 years versus 45% of white students. Moreover, the company revealed that Black and Latinx students accumulate $25,000 more in student debt than their white peers. To help combat some of the disparity, Fidelity is joining with United Negro College Fund, which calls itself the nation's largest and most effective education organization. With the gift, UNCF revealed it has gained the largest philanthropic corporate gift in its 78-year history from Fidelity Investments to launch the Fidelity Scholars Program. The UNCF reported Fidelity is donating $190 million to UNCF as part of the company's $250 million initiative. And I think that this is very important because education is often seen as elitist, and this is kind of leveling the playing field and getting some more folks out there. So we applaud that. That absolutely is an example of becoming a better ally. So shout out to Fidelity Investments now. from a bright moment in education to a little bit darker moment. The Florida Department of Education has declined to include an advanced placement African American studies course proposed by the College Board and schools. This article comes from BINnews.com. And before we get into it, what are your early thoughts, or what were your early thoughts when you first heard about this and the why?
You and I have discussed the very, very rapid and dramatic temperature change in overt racism post the election of our former president. Mm-hmm. And I saw hundreds of thousands, millions of Black people arguing for overt racism's place in today's culture, in today's ecosystem,
okay,
as something they preferred. I like for my racists to wear it on their chest and say it with their chest and let us know how they really feel. And I've always pushed back on that, right? Because the actual outcomes matter more than the performative part.
Yeah.
Right? So if being ashamed of being racist means you treat my children nicer just so people will think you're not racist, then
let's run that.
I prefer that.
Yeah, let's run that.
I don't need to know your true colors if the world I live in is better because you're faking it. I don't live with you. I'm not in your home. So you're allowed to keep those private, dangerous, bigoted thoughts to yourself. Mm-hmm. With everyone now wearing it more on their chest, I think I spoke to you off air about the idea that there are a lot of people who part of their not just social identity, but professional identity is that they're decent. So to protect their pocketbooks, they got to pretend to be decent people, mm-hmm. or at least they used to. Because something like this would have never been something that we even considered having to cover in news, because those people would have understood how flagrantly and overtly racist it would be.
Yeah. To say what they said.
To say what they said and to have something like this make the news, they'd be too embarrassed.
Yeah.
Nobody's embarrassed anymore.
They're standing on it.
They're standing
dug
on
in.
It.
Yeah.
And stand to lose nothing.
Yeah.
Because their supporters now feel more inclined and more emboldened to support these types of views and express these type of views out loud. Mm-hmm. This governor, in a state that is extremely diverse, can come out and with a straight face tell people that there is no scholastic or educational value and African American studies.
That's the most hurtful thing.
And have a whole governing body stand behind him and support it. And I'd be willing to bet that there were minorities involved in this decision. I'd be willing to bet that blindly.
You know, I if I were to accept that, it would be very easy, because as we've seen in the first part of the show, when we were talking about the five officers that ended the life of, I think his name is Tyre Nichols, they were all Black. All five of those officers ended that Black child's life. Six Black people involved. So absolutely, I could totally see this board, you know, parroting these, what we believe to be white supremacist sentiments, and really espousing these ideals. And again, I think that the thing that's so hurtful about this is that they say it has no educational value. That part is really hurtful. So again, I mentioned that I had a conversation, a very meaningful conversation earlier in the week with a person that I feel deserves way more of a stage than he already has. And he's got a huge stage, Anthony Browder. Once upon a time at our old station where Q and I used to work, I'd go into the program director's office. I was a music director, so I'd go in the office at the end of the day and I would program the logs for the next day. I was a music director, meaning that I basically scheduled the order in which the songs played. Surprise, supplies, you know, they don't take your requests. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway.
Some DJs that...
Sometimes you can get a request in, but for the most part, it's predetermined. Anyway, so I would go in there and I'd spend some time, put a lot of thought into this, and it would take some time. And I would listen to these lectures. I would listen to these people, these great thinkers, these really educated folks, Anthony Browder being one of them. And I realized that I was either not educated or miseducated. I was given an alternative version of reality. In fact, I still know things that aren't entirely true. And I learned that in my conversation recently with him. And so I personally began to appreciate the value of a full education, an education that included African history as human history, as world history. An education that included African American history as American history, right? Because it's crazy. How do you tell the story of the United States? Well, we were being oppressed by, you know, the King of England. You know, they were taxing us, and we didn't have any representation. And then the Boston Tea Party, and then, you know, the story.
You know, lack of religious freedoms, et cetera.
And this is, you know, a lot of things go into this. So basically, we're trying as a country, or we started off as a series of colonies, but we were trying to gain our independence, right? Gain some autonomy, be self-determined. And, you know, this fighting spirit is indeed written into the story of this country, right? But when you break it down a little further, for Black people, that wasn't true. And we're still trying to make it true day after day, year after year, decade after decade. We're still inching forward. We'd love to feel as free as that rich white man that we always talk about seems to be.
It is. You couldn't see it. But as you were saying that, I just got chills. And the reason why is I've been trying to figure out how to say something for as long as we've been doing this show, and really for as long as I've been having these thoughts. And I think you just helped me get there. I do not think there is a more determined people to be a part of this country's history and what it celebrates than Black people. We really, 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 really are proud Americans, insanely so, considering our history with this country and everything that it stands for and everything that it was built on. But we are the single most determined people, I think, in the history of the world to subscribe to the teachings and beliefs of a country that has essentially for most of its history not just undervalued and underappreciated us, but abused us. And we somehow still really, really, really want to be proud Americans. We do not want to seek our revenge. We do not want to overthrow the place. We just want to, like all those words that you guys didn't mean about us when you were writing the Constitution, when you were writing the Bill of Rights, when you were writing the Pledge of Allegiance, when you were writing all these beautiful things that we sing and memorize and recite. Even though we now realize you were not talking about us, we still hope one day we're going to wake up and you guys are going to be like, okay, you guys too.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it. Yeah. That's funny that you said that.
That is a really...
That's a pretty low bar.
It's both awesome and so crushingly difficult that's true.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
You're saying that. I'm just like, wow, man. Like,
well, I think that makes the point, because, you know, their worry has historically been with the whole conversation about CRT or really American history, and whether or not that should be taught in classrooms. Their whole conversation has been about it. Let's be honest, centering the feelings of white children at the expense of everyone else.
Of white children's parents.
Ooh, that way.
They say it's about the children.
Yeah.
It's about their parents.
Yeah.
Who have to answer those questions and speak to those feelings that their intelligent children will have when they hear those stories.
Sure.
they're not going to assume culpability and feel guilty themselves. They're going to feel hurt. They're going to want questions answered. They're going to feel empathy. And they're going to have to teach that out of them.
Yeah.
And they don't want that.
Yeah.
I think the word they use is indoctrinated. They think that these teachings will indoctrinate their children to want to rise up and be
good people.
Yes, but that's not the word they use. Activist.
Oh, yeah, good people.
They don't want their children to become activist, Rams.
That's funny. Well, I think that, you know, again, that kind of proves the point. And, you know, if you educate people, young people especially, about African American history, Black history in this country, and indeed African history by itself, and you teach it all the way thoroughly up to present day, then what you're teaching the students is, well, these Black people, these African and African American people have an incredible resolve. They're very diligent. They have been through a lot and have not organized to rise up, you know, en masse, you know. And if that were something that were to happen, nobody could really blame them. And yet that's not what they want. They're just simply seeking to be counted. They're seeking to have a fair go at things. Why is my neighbor's house $300,000 more than mine? And it's the same house. I'm Black and I live here and my neighbor's not Black. And if I change the family portrait in my house, then all of a sudden the value of my house goes up $300,000. Why is it that Black real estate agents make less? And we're just talking about one tiny, teeny tiny facet. Why is Black wealth? Why we're talking about education outcomes. Why is education, you know what I mean? And you can't, and it's, there's so many people that will just accept the way the world is because A, it doesn't affect them, or B, they don't know any better. But, you know, I think that a comforting thought for folks is, well, that's just how it is. You know, some people are better at this, some people are better at that. And that's a falsehood, because what I often do is compare Black outcomes across the Atlantic. So are the outcomes for African Americans the same as the outcomes for Africans? And if so, then, you know, okay, your point is well made, but often enough, the outcomes are not the same. And so what's the difference? Well, these are African Americans and these are Africans. So the American part must be the difference. So what's going on with the American part that's making the African Americans suffer more than the African counterparts? Granted, Africa's not in the best shape, but there's different ailments in African countries. There's the legacy of colonialism. There's, you know, the theft really in mass. And then bad deals and people not honoring, and then all kinds of government manipulation, British government manipulation that, you know, destabilizes a country. And then you are left with a continent that looks the way it looks now. But, you know, how the prison populations look, you know what I mean? You see what I'm saying? So history is very important because it gives you a framework to understand the world a little bit better. Now, I didn't read this article yet, and I do need to read it just to, you know, preserve some journalistic integrity here. So I'll start. According to WESH 2 News, the FDOE said in a letter to College Board that it would not approve including AP African American Studies into the Florida course code directory and instructional personnel assignments because, quote, the content of this course is inexplicably contrary to Florida law. That would have been enough. Wow. It wouldn't have been enough, but okay. But here's where the knife gets twisted. And significantly lacks educational value. Okay, that's the hurtful part. So my history lacks educational value. And mind you, this is an AP course.
And it's contrary to the law.
Yeah, and I get that. That's, you know, you fight some battles, you lose some battles, what are you going to do, right? But then to go ahead and insult the educational value of our history is a slap in the face. You know, matter of fact, our way Black history fact should have been about that beach in Florida where only Blacks could That was the only beach in Florida where black people could go and swim. In fact, I'll do that. And that'll show you just how racist Florida has been in the past. And this obviously shows that Florida still, at least in these pockets of power, tenuous power, how racist it still can be. And I was making a point. This is an AP course. So those, for those familiar, AP is not kindergarten. It's not first grade. It's not second grade. AP is advanced placement, I believe, is the is what it's abbreviated for. I took AP courses in high school. It was a long time ago. But all right, I'll finish reading, or I'll continue reading, rather. The AP African American Studies course was piloted this academic year in 60 schools across the nation, per the College Board website. The course intends to introduce high school students to African American studies and includes a curriculum that covers literature, geography, and more. All right, here's a quote. Drawing from expertise and experience of college faculty and teachers across the country, the course is designed to offer high school students an evidence-based introduction to African American studies. A description of the course reads, per College Board, quote, the interdisciplinary course reaches into a variety of fields, literature, the arts and humanities, political science, geography, and more science, to explore the vital contributions and experiences of African Americans. During the 2023-24 academic school year, the pilot is expected to be implemented in hundreds of schools before all institutions can start offering the course in 2024-25. The first AP exams are set to be administered in the spring of 2025. Following the FDOE blocking the African American Studies course, College Board issued the following statement. Quote, like all new AP courses, AP African American Studies is undergoing a rigorous multi-year pilot phase, collecting feedback from teachers, students, scholars, and policymakers. The process of piloting and revising course frameworks is standard part of any new AP course, and frameworks change significantly as a result. We look forward to publicly releasing the updated course framework as soon as it is completed and well before this class is widely available in American high schools. In its letter to College Board, the FDOE wrote, in the future, should College Board be willing to come back to the table with lawful, historically accurate content, FDOE will always be willing to reopen the discussion. Okay, so basically they spent years with some of the most prominent educators in this country developing this curriculum. They piloted it to see if it works. And then when they took it to Florida, Florida says it lacks significant education, or sorry, significantly lacks educational value. And then later says that the content was historically inaccurate. Or in other words, if you come back to the table with lawful, historically accurate content, we'll resume the conversation. So that lets me know.
And still ultimately tell you no.
Yeah.
As long as we're empowered to do so.
Right. They're going to make it wrong, even if it's not. They already did that. And I think your point that you made was they're doing this right in front of everyone's face, not even hiding the fact. And they're adding insult to injury. It's like they're mocking us.
Yeah.
How dare you say.
And singularly. Because other AP history classes from other cultures, other backgrounds, other migrant cultures that came over to this land.
Talk to them, Q.
Those are historically accurate and lawful.
Mm. I did a talk about this, again, on the Black Information Network daily podcast, where I discussed the Holocaust. So... let's talk about this. A tragedy is a tragedy. I want to make sure that I say that. I do believe that children should know about the Holocaust. I believe everybody should know about the Holocaust. It is an awful thing that happened, and we need to continue to learn from it so that we know how to be the best brothers and sisters to our Jewish brothers and sisters as we can possibly be. A, and B, we need to know about it so we know how to observe the makings of a similar event phenomenon taking place in the future so that we can prevent it from, you know, prevent the systematic extermination of human beings for their religious beliefs, right? It's necessary. It has significant educational value, right? I believe this, right? So does the Florida Department of Education, right? 6 million. Now, again, I'm not, an atrocity is an atrocity, and I'm not trying to compare other than to say that while that counts in my view and their view as significantly having educational value, also, when you take into account the amount of slaves that died just in the Middle Passage, I think that was somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 million, 80, 85 million, something like that. If that number may not be right, but it's certainly more than 6 million, right? And so that too belongs here. And if that were the only thing, that would be it. But obviously, the rabbit hole goes much deeper. But now it's time for the Way Black History Facts. So let's move it on. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And today we are pulling from two sources. This will be RollingStone.com. Shout out to Rolling Stone. They did a nice article on us. And BlackPast.org. And we are talking about Bo Diddley. Sorry, I had a moment. Shout out to Rolling Stone because they did an article on us. That's actually
Shout
true.
Shout out to Rolling Stone. They did do
an article on this show.
An article on us. That's
special.
That's an impossible thing to say out loud and it be true.
Man, we're doing something special apparently. All right. Boxer and singer Bo Diddley, whose birth name was Ellis Bates McDaniel, was born on December 30th, 1928. In Macomb, Mississippi. He was adopted by his mother's cousin when the mother's husband died in the mid-1930s. McDaniel moved her family to Chicago, where young Ellis took violin lessons from Professor O.W. Frederick at the Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church. He studied violin for 12 years and composed two concertos. I never know how to say that word. In 1940, his sister bought McDaniel an acoustic guitar for Christmas. He soon started to play the guitar, largely duplicating his actions on the violin. Soon afterward, he formed his first group of three named the Hipsters, and later known as the Langley Avenue Jive Cats. I love that. It was during this time that the band leaders gave him the nickname Bo Diddley. Diddley recorded his first single, Bo Diddley / I Am a Man, on March 2nd, 1955, on Checkers Records. It topped the R&B chart for 2 weeks. Soon afterward, Diddley began to tour, performing in schools, colleges, and churches across the United States. Regardless of the venue, he taught people the importance of respect and education and all the dangers of drugs and gang culture. For a young Black singer and guitarist from Chicago with only a minor hit, getting booked on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1955 was a career-making opportunity. Sullivan asked him to sing Tennessee Erie Ford's country smash, 16 Tons. Instead, the young star unleashed the guitar maelstrom that introduced him to the world and whose title bore his name, Bo Diddley. The audience went wild and Sullivan fumed, promising that Diddley would never appear on television again. Later, Diddley recalled the aftermath. Quote, he says to me, "You're the first colored boy ever double-crossed me on a song," unquote. "And I started to hit dude because I was a young hoodlum out of Chicago and thought colored boy was an insult." Hey man, you're right about that. Colored boy is an insult. All right, Diddley was pure masculinity with songs that shouted his name and proclaimed his skills. With a cigar box-shaped guitar he designed himself, a Stetson on his head, and a sound that permanently reoriented the world's senses of rhythm. Bo Diddley called himself the originator, and when he died at age 79 on June 2nd from heart failure in his home in Archer, Florida, music lost a one-of-a-kind pioneer. Bo Diddley was known for many new musical styles and innovations. He was one of the first musicians of the 1950s to incorporate women musicians, including Lady Bo. He hired her full time to play all of his stage performances, whereupon she became the first female lead guitarist in history to be employed by a major act. Also, the usage of special effects like reverb, tremolo, and his manipulations of the guitar made him a groundbreaking musician. Diddley hopped and strutted around stage while playing his guitar over his head, with his teeth, and even between his legs. In that regard, he influenced numerous rock musicians from the 1960s on. And in 1986, Bo Diddley was inducted into the Washington Area Music Association's Hall of Fame. Then, in the following year, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. In 1996, Diddley received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Rhythm and Blues Foundation in Los Angeles, while the following year, his 1955 debut record of his song Bo Diddley was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame as a recording of lasting qualitative or historical significance. Also in 1996, he received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammy Awards ceremony. In 2000, Diddley was inducted into the Mississippi Museum Musicians Hall of Fame, as well as the North Florida Music Association's Hall of Fame. And in 2007, Diddley went to Mississippi to receive the Governor's Award for Excellence in Arts for Lifetime Achievement, which is the state's highest arts honor. Let's see. And he was married four times, and he was survived by his five children, 15 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren, and three great-great-grandchildren. And I love this story because, and the reason that I was kind of primed for the story is because I saw a clip on social media as a video of Ray Charles, right? And Ray Charles was getting interviewed. My older sister actually posted this, so shout out to my sister Trudy. And that's her screen name if you want to follow her. It's true_D. Anyway.
That's dope.
So in this video, a journalist is, interviewing Ray Charles, and he says something like, you know, Elvis is really good, right? Elvis is really good. And Ray Charles goes, okay. And the journalist says, whoa, okay, well, you know, you tell me, what are your thoughts on Elvis? And he says, well, Elvis is, you know, let's be honest. And then effectively what he says is that Elvis copied black music, copied black dance styles, singing styles, you know, guitar styles, etc., and just repackaged it for a white audience, and that's why he was successful. But that didn't make him good. It's not to say that he was bad, but there were certainly a lot of people who were better performers, musicians, singers, etc. And so for Elvis to be celebrated in that way, Ray Charles just couldn't really see it. And he was almost insulted. In fact, I think he was insulted to be having to have this conversation about Elvis Presley when he's Ray Charles, right? And from his perspective, it didn't seem like arrogance. It seemed like, oh, well, shoot, I never thought of that. You're absolutely right. You know, we, you know, who didn't grow up in that time, we look at it like, oh yeah, Elvis, he's like one of the greats. Sure, why not, right? But the way he tells it, it's like, oh shoot, he's right, right? And so having that sort of as the backdrop for, you know, this Bo Diddley story, I realized that, you know, it's up to us to make those connections, those decidedly black connections to rock and roll, to everything that was black, because, you know, we need to give credit where credit is due. We need to highlight our contributions to this country in entertainment and in every other space. Because they're often overlooked, and we need to make sure that we celebrate our heroes. And so Bo Diddley was the name of the day, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is your Way Black History Fact.
That's incredible.
Nice and neat, right?
Yeah, I got to learn about Bo Diddley as a kid because Bo Jackson, a very prominent and famous athlete, mm-hmm. part of his marketing campaign through Nike was, "You don't know Bo." And then Bo Diddley said, "Bo don't know Diddley." So it was a really good play on words and a way of interjecting himself back into the social
popular culture. Yeah,
culture.
I love that. Well, we'd like to thank you once again for tuning in to Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. This is once again Civic Cypher.
Mm-hmm. Do us a favor. Hit the website, civiccypher.com. Check out this and any previous episodes. If you feel so inclined, shoot us any topics you want us to cover, any questions we can answer for you. Please make a donation. The show is growing. and your donations are certainly helping us on our way. And be sure to tap in with us on our social media. It's at Civic Cypher on all platforms. You can follow me at Ramses Job.
I am Q Ward.
And I think that'll do it for us around here. So until next time, y'all.
Peace.
Peace.
Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds are spit tuned from sunlight to moon. Busting off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show. Get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines. Wake up, refuse, and resist. Like this.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, starting Friday, February 3rd, until Saturday, March 4th. Screenings will take place every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, bringing live interviews with filmmakers, community conversations, and more. Films will be screened at PCC Cascade, Hollywood Theater, and virtually. Full schedule and location information can be found at African Film.